Hello, everyone. I'm sharing the sofa with Diego Zax today, the VP of design at Ramp. The fintech getting a lot of positive noise at the moment, I'd say. I think that's from the outside looking in anyway. When I first met you, Diego, what I really realized was the obsession with creating the best customer experience and going above and beyond to make that better and better and better. And that's why it's from the outside looking in, it feels like it's becoming more and more successful as a business. So It's so great to have you here today. I want to use today to, yes, dive into a bit about your story for sure and your experience, but also leaning on why product design and consumer experience is so important in such a crowded market. I think it's, I think people have their ideas about, yeah, we, of course it should be more simple or better or easier for the user, but why is that and what's the long-term gain of that? So yeah, I'm excited to kick off, but first, I'm gonna go back to the old podcast agenda when we start with a little this or that, five questions, kind of a favorites thing. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. All right, we're starting with least favorite app.
Least favorite app? Up until recently, that was TikTok.
Really?
But I've learned that I was just being dismissive because of being ignorant. And I've met some people who use it as a tool and not as a consumption mechanism.
Interesting.
And we've started completely changing our approach to social, to just being a super fast test bed for any creative ideas.
Wow.
So I actually like it a lot now.
Really? Okay, yeah. That's great. So that, I like how you flip that as well.
Yeah.
From favorite into favorite, because that was the fourth question. Favorite song at the moment?
I am listening, and this has been the last maybe 3 years,
yeah,
has been Ben Bomer's DJ set over Cappadocia. He's on a hot air balloon, a DJ set.
I've seen it, the YouTube, and yeah. It's just beautiful
yeah, all through. So I think it's a perfect set.
Because I put that on as well, and I make sure it's 4K or like the best quality for no reason, just so I can, you know.
Just it's there.
So often. Yeah. Amazing. Favorite city?
New York.
Yeah. Sweet or savory?
Always savory.
Yeah. And the last one was favorite app. You can't choose TikTok.
Favorite app.
You can't choose Ramp.
That's fair. I'm going to say it's Cron, the calendar, which is now Notion calendar.
Oh, Cron.
Yeah, I live in my calendar, and this thing is just the fastest, best designed, easiest to use calendar thing. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
Both desktop and mobile. Just.
I'm writing that down as we speak. That I've actually got.
Notion calendar.
Okay, amazing. Well, that's it. That's great. I thought, let's do that, find out a bit about you, but now it's time. I want to just dive right in with the kind of most common question we ask was, who was the first person to make you feel like you had talent?
Well, the first was my grandfather. He was a painter, and I used to, you know, spend a lot of time with him before he passed in the 90s. I was a kid. So he would just show me, he would just say, hey, you can paint, and just giving, you know, access to his studio and his actual full-size easel and everything. I would get to paint with him, and he would just show me, and that, I think, got the bug of the visual arts of communication in there.
Is that from the feeling you got after, or the feeling doing it, or even before?
There's an interview with this guy who is the father of the youngest superstar in golf right now. I can't remember his name, but he's saying, people ask him all the time, how do you make your kid love golf? And he said, you don't make him love golf. You take him to the golf court or whatever. To the golf course, and then just have a great time with them. Leave before they're done, and then take them to the clubhouse and sit with them and have a Coke. And like, they'll remember whenever they're going through all the rough parts of all the frustration, they'll just go back to that feeling of sitting at the clubhouse with their dad, having a Coke, and that's why they love it. So I think what my grandfather did was something very similar, where he would just invite me to paint. And I remember just hanging out with him and having a great time with him, just painting and doing this stuff. And so there's always that, like, I can go back to that moment whenever design is hard or whenever I have too much pressure. I'm like, why am I doing this? Why am I here? I kind of always, there's always that like under layer of everything's great. I'm just eight and I'm hanging out with my grandpa.
Wow. It makes you think of the, I know everyone's talking about like value creation and creating value, and it's more, there's not enough spending time in the feeling, the reward, or the thing that you have saved by doing the thing you've done, and you know, that's, I think that becomes more and more important and feels like a necessity when you're younger. You kind of just subconsciously veer towards that stuff. Yeah. But no, that's nice. Okay, so let's talk about getting into the industry. Like, how, sounds like there's some real inspiration from your from your grandpa as well. Mm-hmm. But what about, like, how did you know that you could get a job out of this?
So when I was 13, I was deciding it was either cardiology or something else. Didn't know what. I always had this, I was always interested in the arts and visual design, just like visual craft. And my father, he was doing an ad campaign at the JWT. He was working with JWT on an ad campaign for his thing. He met the creative director and the writer and like everybody. And he said, hey, my son's 13. He can Photoshop stuff. Let him hang out and he'll just hang out here and do work.
Amazing.
And you know, I met them, vibed, wasn't annoying. And they were like, all right, fine. We'll let him hang out. And then I spent basically the entire summer as like an unpaid intern, very unofficial. I don't think you can do that here, but that was back in Venezuela where like the rules don't really apply very much.
Yeah.
And I just hung out with them for months and I was just Photoshopping all kinds of, I mean, 13-year-old working on like Smirnoff ads.
Crazy.
It showed me that like, hey, there's a real need. There's a real business around this. And it was really fun too. It was just like all these, like we would just play Day of Defeat, like in the lunch breaks.
Yeah,
it was pre Call of Duty.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's just like you're just doing the thing. I was just doing the thing that was fun.
Yeah.
This was more fun. I never thought, oh, this is going to be a business that I'm going to make money out of this.
Really?
I've never really thought about making money out of any of it. And I think that was what I would recommend is if you have enough to just live, don't worry about the money, just worry about doing the best possible job that you can. And in order to do that, you have to have as much fun as you can with it because it shows through the work and money comes after.
Wow.
It just happens.
What's the environment like in a JWT because how old are you at this point?
13.
13.
Yeah.
Like, what is that like? That is that just a sensory overload? Is it just seeing amazing things happen everywhere you look? Or
we were working with all these gigantic brands coming up with, I mean, they were extremely just generous with me. They brought me into all the rooms. They just treated me like one person in the team. I was out there throwing ideas for Wendy's, for Smirnoff, for Toyota, for Chevy, for like all these companies. And then actually making the ads, like Photoshopping, learning how to like get the shadows just right. It was fantastic. I think I'm very lucky in having people like Ezequiel and Octavio. Like I remember them, Eduardo, like those three guys. There was like the triplet of the creative director, the art director, and the copywriter.
Wow.
They basically like showed me that this was a path.
It's also such an interesting experiment, that of getting access to a 13-year-old's brain in advertising.
Yeah, what do I know about Smirnoff Vodka at 13?
But that's what's so amazing, I think, is that like you bring such a brand new perspective to something that we've all made there's stigmas to and pre-connotations about. Yeah. That's really, really cool. Okay, so then what's like, you know, we move on from 13 years old.
Yep.
And then what? And then where do you go?
Well, I went to school because I thought, okay, I need to learn the basics, like the fundamentals of this thing. And funny enough, I wanted to go to Pratt here in New York for my undergrad, but for one reason or another, I stayed in Venezuela, and there still is, but it's not the same. But there was just this confluence of incredible designers that had emigrated from, like, after the war in Europe. So like a lot of German designers had and Swiss and French and people, they've somehow kind of ended up in Venezuela. There was like the whole like Gestalt movement had kind of moved. So a lot of people from there, and I was able to learn from just the most incredible minds in design that actually just happened to be there. Like people who have still winning the most beautiful books in the world award, like the Golden Letter. Yeah. It has like five of them. And I got to just learn from him. Álvaro Sotillo, who's unbelievable Venezuelan designer. Just being in the presence of someone who can, you'll never be able to replicate how good the sketch actually is. Like he'll just draw something out and just give it to you and you try to make it and you'd never get it. It was always better in the sketch. And just like this, I don't know, just learning from people like that has been, I kind of stumbled from like lucky break to lucky break just by the people that I was able to meet.
Yeah. Is that lucky or is it just getting yourselves in the right rooms where you feel like there's momentum?
Yeah, and I think if you're having fun with it and you're trying to do the best work you can and you're trying to learn, I think people respond to that. Mm. And I think the best people became the best people because they had that attitude. And they hopefully, I don't want to presume, but like I'm thinking about this now when I see people that are like up and coming designers that reach out, I can see them as like, if you're having fun with it, if you're really into it for learning, like I want to help you out. There's like this immediate, like, yes, just come. Mm. Come hang out. We have one person who's at Ramp now. He applied, came to events, met, like just, you know, we fought for him to, like, he didn't have the level just yet to like be at the company, but we felt that he would.
Yeah.
And he was going to learn. So we just essentially just created an apprenticeship just for him.
Wow.
To come into, just to hire him. And then 3 months later, he's got a full-time job and he's great. He's crushing it.
Yeah. Cause there's just such a curiosity around those people as well.
Like
doing what they want to do, but also just like wanting to know more, just out and not even to improve necessarily. Yeah. It's just to find out because it energizes them.
In the end, you want to, this is a principle that we apply at Ramp, which is you want to hire for the intercept, not for the slope. So not the skills they have at the moment, but you're taking a bet that they will have the skills. So it's kind of irrelevant what they know or don't know right now, as long as they know how to learn and teach themselves and grow quickly, they're going to surpass anyone.
And how do you make that bet less risky?
It's not that risky. I think a lot of companies think about hiring as this permanent thing, like you're getting married, it's you hire someone, you give them a shot. If it doesn't work out, very quickly you know. So you work with them to try and get that, and then if it doesn't work out, then right away you part ways. It wasn't it. We don't punish that at the company. I think in a lot of places, if a manager hires someone, they don't want to look foolish, like, oh, I hired the wrong person. So they kind of keep them in the seat for too long. And it's just a year later, everyone's miserable and they still leave.
Yeah.
But luckily, we haven't had too many of those. I think we've dialed our hiring process. Most of the design team is involved in hiring now.
Mm. Yeah, so, that's great. So then what energizes you? Like, day to day at Ramp, but also in general, is it the being really clear on your objectives? Is it seeing teams perform well or anything that stands out?
I don't think it's changed from hanging out with my grandpa. Really? Like, is this fun? Can we make something? Can we have fun with it? The idea that you can just do things. I'll give you an example, and I wasn't able to share this until like maybe an hour ago, but like we were working on today's is what? Thursday.
Yeah.
Last Thursday or last Wednesday, our media buyer, we sign a new media buyer for brand awareness campaign for the year, and they tell us, hey, there are Super Bowl spots available. Wow. It's next week. Do you want to buy them? And we all look at each other and say, well, that's insane. Nobody can make a Super Bowl ad in 4 days, actually, because you have to submit it for approval to the network. Really? Yeah. So we had from Wednesday, that was Wednesday, like 7 p.m. We have to submit for approval on Tuesday noon for Fox to run in the Super Bowl. So we had less than a week from like, should we do this thing through like, submitted for approval by the NFL and Fox and everyone. And frankly, we just thought it'd be really fun to give it a shot.
Yeah.
So every time we would started asking like, well, what if we did, well, we'd only do it if, you know, something insane. And then that we would just ask for that insane thing and then it would happen. So like the first question we asked was, well, okay, we would do it, but only if Saquon Barkley is in it. He's like the superstar of the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And then we just talked to him.
Wow.
And he's like, yeah, sure, you guys rule. Like, and his manager's awesome. Everybody's having fun. And it's just, we just, 3 days later, we're in Philly.
3 days later.
3 days later, we're in Philly with a full built out set. Saquon shows up for an hour. We shoot the Super Bowl ad and then like, that's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just, that's so cool to hear because it's like, I feel like we're in a world of iteration, like everywhere. It feels like there's just versions upon versions upon versions. And I understand why that's important, but sometimes it's like, let's get the thing done.
Yeah,
let's,
but don't get me wrong. We made 120 versions of the ad before Saquon showed up. Like
really?
We actually trained an 11 Labs voice, like AI voice with Saquon, so we could actually have him say anything, and we were prototyping. So we had the workflow was, we would write a quick script. Within 20 minutes, there was a runway, like a Midjourney to runway animatic with Saquon voiceover.
Wow.
This was like it would take us half an hour to do this, and we would just change out the it wasn't, you know, this traditional thing of like, you write the script and you write three of them and then you have like side by side and you get approval and then whatever. It just, there was no way it could work that way. And I don't think we could have pulled this off a year ago.
Really?
Yeah. I think the technology now is the thing that allowed us to, we made, when we showed up in Philly to shoot with our production company, we had already seen the ad 50 times. We knew exactly what we were going to get. It was just a execute on this. Obviously they were involved. They helped us. Like, we just brought in everyone to make the ad better. So the production agency had a hand in shaping it. They'd seen it 50 times. They knew exactly what we needed.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so impressive.
Yeah. But this goes back to like, we're just having fun with it. We're looking at new tools. We're curious. We're trying to learn constantly. Like, if we weren't obsessed with figuring out how to use Midjourney and Runway and 11 Labs and all these companies that like came out in the last year, there's no way we could have done this. So that's why I'm saying people who are constantly trying to learn, trying new tools, are curious about it. Doesn't matter what they know today, because next year they're just a completely different person.
Yeah.
So you take a bet on that.
It's such a good point. You've closed that off like perfectly. I think that ad in particular feels like the potential future of advertising and what, you know, what, like, executing on that thing couldn't be much easier because of the fast iteration that you've gone through using technology.
Yeah. I mean, there's no right or wrong way to do it. This is really the way that we needed to do it. The only way that we could pull it off was doing it this way. But yeah, we're always open. I'm sure next year it'll be some other way, completely different.
Oh, okay. So something that really stuck with me in our last conversation a couple of months ago is you told me that product velocity correlates to high quality or quality. Can you explain a bit more on that and what that means?
The easiest way to frame it is if you ship once a month, whatever you do is going to be broken for a month or incorrect for a month. You can spend 6 months in theory, like writing a script, iterating on a script. Until you see it, there's nothing really that you can do about it. You're never going to get the actual feel for it. So when you're building a product, what you want to do is just get it out there as fast as possible. I know there's this idea of like fail fast and all that. I think people like to say that a lot, but I don't know that companies are actually committed to that, because most companies punish failure and they reward being right. I think for us, we've switched that over to rewarding making decisions quickly. Whether they're right or wrong, it doesn't matter, because if it took you 6 months to make a decision and you're wrong, you're wrong at 6 months. Yeah. If it took you 2 weeks and you had no idea what you were picking, you were wrong maybe four times over 8 weeks, and then you're kind of done in 2 months. Yeah. You might be right 2 months later versus 6 months of your first shot. Yeah. So the more shots you can take, the faster you're going to learn. And in order to do that, you have to do two things, which is make it really easy for people to iterate and make decisions, and then make it really reduce the risk of being wrong, like the blast radius of a decision as much as possible. And that you could do that through access to users, to customers. Like maybe you have an alpha beta process, you have like a design group that you're working with, like five customers that are super friendly that are not going to churn, and they're going to give you real feedback, versus turning on for everyone, versus turning on to 1% of beta, just like get a sense.
I guess you have all of that control. So I was going to say, internally, that makes so much sense. But then how do you, like, loyalty and retention is such a massive thing in a product like Ramp, I'm sure. So, how do you put that out externally without completely almost forcing consumers out of the product? But I guess what you're doing with giving some access is almost creating like an exclusivity around that thing, maybe unintentionally.
I mean, you're creating a safe place for teams to experiment and iterate. You want to reduce, like I was saying, like the blast radius of a decision as much as possible, but you still need it to be big enough to get signal on what you're doing. So if you turn it on for one customer and they love it. Now, we recently did this. We are a reporting product. We built it out, brand new, like super advanced functionality. And we were talking to maybe like 20, 50 customers that were power users of this thing. Mm-hmm. And, we built it out like 2 months later. It's like super powerful. It's amazing. We're super happy. All the numbers are going up, whatever. We realized we weren't talking to most users. We turned it on for everyone. And the simplest users that just needed to know, like, hey, how much did my company spend on taxis last month? Mm-hmm. Were completely overwhelmed by this like super dashboard thing. So we got that feedback, and like 2 weeks later we had shipped a whole bunch of improvements, talking to the people who hated it, and just we're right again. So it's okay. Like, we were just wrong for like a month or two and built this incredible reporting product. And then immediately fixed it and got the simple use cases back. Versus like working in a vacuum, trying to like in your head get this thing right. So the idea of and the reason I kind of harp on this velocity and quality not being like velocity being the way to quality is because generally the first instinct that I've seen, I used to have this instinct as well. I was allergic to moving fast because I thought, oh, I need to really think this through. I really need to polish this design. I really want to do another version. I really need to Figma. I don't want people to see it, whatever. I think that is the default reaction, especially among designers generally. I think it's changing a bit, but that's usually the first, like, no, we need to slow down. We're doing too many things. Yeah. The quality is not there. My designs don't look good enough. I'm not necessarily proud of it. It's okay. Not, you have to be uncomfortable for a little bit and just keep working at it until it's great. It doesn't mean you stop. The whole point is that you don't stop working at it.
Yeah.
You ship it and you keep going.
Yeah.
It's not you just like move on to the next thing immediately. You have to keep iterating. You have to figure out where you went wrong. And then over time you get to that like end result that was not in your head even, because the reality changes it.
That's so interesting. I'm really curious to know how you foster that environment. Because when I think, and I wonder how that compares to in a brand compared to in an agency, because let's say when you're in an agency, it's a service-based business where you're kind of unsure if you're right or wrong until the client sees it. So it's like, does it feel like just iteration after iteration and take it slow is the right approach?
I mean, agencies are fundamentally a different business than an in-house creative team. Agencies' margins come from time spent, expert time spent on things. Our margins come from something else completely. So I'm okay having someone spend 8 times more time on something.
Yeah.
Because that thing is going to generate, you know, billions in revenue later on. There's not really no cap to the leverage that you get from an extra hour versus at an agency, an extra hour of someone eats into your project fee or you have to bill it extra. So there's very limited upside at an agency for going slower. So they move really quickly. They're trying to get as much as you can, they're trying to get as much design out as possible, as fast as possible, to give a client as many options as possible, just like try to get a sense for it. The thing that I particularly, when I moved from agency to in-house, the thing that did it for me was the inability to follow up with the work. Because I would do, you know, I would take my best guess based on research. I would work on something for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, however long the project was. And then I would hand it off. And then I don't know if it worked or not. And I'm sure, you know, 80% of my decisions were like sort of wrong and needed a lot of polish, or half of them were just fully incorrect and like needed to be fixed. So I would see this over and over where we'd deliver something and then the internal teams kind of had to deal with it and drive it across. Unless you're an agency that's like multi-year relationship with a client, then you're essentially their in-house team. So the relationship changes a bit.
It's so interesting how I totally understand they're completely different businesses and how you measure success is very different, but it's almost like, how can you get closer to fostering an environment like in Ramp, for example, but in a creative agency? It's just because that would hopefully in turn mean to better output and potentially less iteration. But yeah, that's for, I'm sure, for another day we could go deep into that.
Yeah, for sure.
Diego, tell me about, I want to know your opinion on leadership and leadership teams and what makes a good leadership team. And I've asked it, I ask it a lot with people I meet, and CEOs and VPs and, you know, design leaders. And the answer varies, but I'd love to get your opinion on what makes a good leadership team.
I think you have to tailor leadership to whatever the company needs generally. Like, what are the outcomes that you're trying to drive? Generally, that comes from the business. I think in order to get those outcomes, you have to create an environment that reflects the company's values, the company's cadence, how they operate, and all of that. So I think a good leader is aware of those two things. And my opinion needs to rely on their team to figure out how to get there. So going back to having fun with things, very selfishly, I've made every decision that I can at Ramp for our culture so that I have a lot of fun every day working there. Like I haven't thought of a different job for the entire time, like the last 5 years and some change. And it's because every time something is not conducive to enjoying the work, which creates better work and keeps people able to be vulnerable and able to take risks and be wrong and show early work. Like if you want that kind of environment, you have to live it and you have to be that, you have to be that environment. I show all the work early. I tell people, I have no idea how to make this decision. I'd love your help. So, and there's different styles of leadership. Some leaders, you know, people look up to them and they look to them for the decision. Ultimately, yes, I own the decision, but I'm going to my team 95% of the time, letting them make the decision.
Yeah.
And then I stand behind it. Because in the end, the people that are closest to the decision should be the ones making it.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think there's also, there's a lot to be said in the vulnerability you show prior to opening up to a team. Right. You know, the whole ethos is fail fast and it's fine to fail.
Yep.
And I think like for a team to feel like they can do that there needs to be some vulnerability that you show.
Yeah. And there's different kinds of vulnerability. If I don't go to my team and tell them like whatever sad story of my life and like that's I'm vulnerable now. No, it's like I just show them work that's not great. And like risks my reputation. Like all the ads that we just did, all the AI stuff was, they're actually like genuinely, I think 95% of the things we made were just absolute trash.
Yeah.
And we were showing it to everyone. It's like, why would Diego show me this thing? Yeah. This is so bad. Like it kind of hurts your reputation a bit. But then eventually, like, I think we've built it in the culture in a way that that makes sense. And it would be weird for me not to show the bad work that maybe led to the good work. And actually, there's always something in an idea that you may be able to pull out.
Yeah.
So if you just write it off and try to curate what you show to the world, then it's kind of a wasted opportunity to learn.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the old saying of like with portfolios of talent you see these and designers you see these days, it's just when there's too much of just the final product and the pretty shots and hero shots and the solution you got to, it's kind of irrelevant in a way because you need to see how they got there and the strategy behind it and the thinking.
Yeah, I'm much more interested to see like the things that they tried that really didn't work and why they didn't work than straight shot, like one shot at this design, nailed it.
Yeah.
Because that's not reliable.
Yeah.
I can't get a sense of reliability of a designer. So the difference, I think, between a junior and a senior designer is just how reliably can they get to a good outcome. Anybody can get to a good outcome once, for sure. Like I've seen designers straight out of school, like I made a design system and it worked. We're talking about like a Figma component system. It's like they're calling it a design system, but that's fine. I didn't know what a design system was until fairly recently, actually. Yeah. Like what it actually is. But like anybody can do it once a year, once every 6 months. But it's when you get to the staff, when you get to the staff level, you should have enough reps that you rarely miss. You could be wrong for 6 months and you build a product, but at the end of that time, you got to the outcome reliably. Mm. A senior designer would still, I would say, needs a little more handholding than a staff designer to get to that outcome. So like, but eventually you start like being mostly right at the end of the process. Mm. And then when you get to the more senior levels, like that's the whole thing. That's consistency.
So we're going to fast forward 5 years. Crazy, I know. What does a product designer look, feel, smell like? What needs to change for them to stay current, to be honest?
Well, smell is funny. 5 years from now, there's not going to be any fragrances anywhere because they're terrible. Yeah. That's what we're learning now.
Yeah,
that's my pitch. There's all these movements around like, should designers code? Should designers use AI? Should designers? The fundamental is like, designers need to be curious. They need to be empathetic. They need to be able to put themselves in someone's shoes. That's not going to change. Mm-hmm. There's this Bezos quote. There's an interview of like people asking what's going to change in the next 10 years. It says that's much less interesting than what's not going to change in the next 10 years, because you can build a business around what's not going to change. Mm-hmm. I'm misquoting him, but he says like, I can guarantee you that 10 years from now, people are going to go to Amazon, are not going to Amazon to say, I love it, but I wish prices were higher. I love it, but I wish delivery was slower. Yeah. That's not going to change. Lower prices, faster deliveries doesn't change. You can build a business around that. So product design and design in general, I think curiosity is not going to change. Curiosity is a form of empathy. And like those two things are the core. They just won't change. Mm-hmm. The tooling, the thing, like who knows if Figma is around in 5 years or not? Who knows if code is around in 5 years? Yeah, I didn't touch After Effects this entire thing to make a Super Bowl commercial. I was just using just basic things to stitch together AI output.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
It makes so much sense of the what's not, because everyone veers towards the what is and what do I need to do to...
Right.
To stay current or stay ahead, and everyone's leaning towards AI, and it's almost like a bit of a scapegoat to that question. Mm-hmm. But it's so true. It's like the fundamentals of why you've become a designer and you've got as far as you have done stay the same.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You asked about, you know, ramp and you kind of simplicity and the building a product that's super simple. I think there's two kinds of paths for us to take. One is AI is changing everything. Like if the train already left the station, all you have to do is just get on it right now. I don't think we have to build our own like base model, like general purpose model. Like doesn't make any sense for us. Mm. We just have to like get on this train and do... like bring it into even more places within Ramp, within the company, within the product. But I don't know what a year from now Ramp the product looks like. Actually, I have an idea of what it could be. But next week, DeepSeek R2, whatever comes out, and it's just, oh, none of this mattered.
Yeah.
The focus is you get people who are curious, who are not afraid to make mistakes, who are not afraid to throw out work. They're going to rethink everything every week for fun. And that's the kind of people you want.
Yeah.
Because then that's where you actually learn, and then you are able to survive whatever the changes are.
Yeah.
To the world.
Yeah, sure. And then final question is, what won't change for Ramp?
I guarantee you that 10 years from now, customers are going to tell us, I would like to spend even less time doing all this work. That's not going away. Mm-hmm. And that companies would like to save even more money. So those two things are fundamentally not going anywhere. The actual how is really everybody's guess right now. Mm-hmm. We're all trying to figure it out. I think we have a guess of what that could look like. We have really awesome plans for just the next couple of months of how we are continue. I mean, you can't use Ramp without AI. It's been that way for 5 years. It's always been in the background.
Yeah.
But just the new capabilities require a new way of thinking about design. And I think the biggest challenge that we'll have as a design profession is just to look up from Figma for a minute. And it's not rectangles. Like there's so much more to what design is. Again, like back to design as a broad profession. I think product design, we've narrowed quite a bit, but everything is a product, everything's a brand. And now that all these tools are kind of like interweaving and you have these like a good example here is writing. Product designers have never had to write. It was never a thing. But actually now writing is so critical. Literally you have to chat with a thing.
Yeah.
So writing all of a sudden is extremely important. And writing used to be, content design. So like the specialization of content design and product design and brand design and all these things, I actually think there's going to be, again, like a confluence of all these coming together to the designer, which is someone who's curious, through that curiosity, develops empathy and develops taste and just that's their contribution to the world. And then all of the things that they want to make can be made around them really easily and just happens. So they get to move people, they get to move companies to build something that's interesting and relevant and just hopefully fun for them.
That is a look into Diego's brain, everyone. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I feel like I could chat with you for another 5 hours, but we have to go. Can't wait to see the Super Bowl ad. Thanks so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. And
of course.
I'm sure so many people get so much value out of hearing from you. Until next time.